Good afternoon. As already mentioned, Steve Baxter from Pipe Networks. Some of you may have been in the peering booth yesterday where I did some gratuitous self-promotion, so I won't do that today because you got enough of it yesterday. I'm talking today about the operational experiences that we've had in starting and running Pipe Networks, as well as just a bit of how we do IX operations as well, to give you some sort of context. A little bit about Pipe Networks. We're a company in Australia. We run peering points. It's effectively a distributed peering point model, whereby we sort of take peering to concentrations of ISPs. We've got 14 sites in six cities. In each of the cities, it's all connected by our own Metro 10 gig on our own dark fibre. So it's all very good. Lots of content on net. Good, stable, profitable business. If you have any questions at all during this, please don't hesitate to talk. If I'm going too fast for the over there, I'm sorry. That's just me. Okay. How we peer? We're effectively an MLPA exchange. We're a single VLAN type setup. There's lots of off the books bilateral peering as well. So it's a single VLAN. We've actually got also ATM access into our peering points with a great partner of our business, PowerTel. Provide the ATM access, the ATM accesses into our peering points. We provide the routing for that to occur, and participants can get their own PVC into that. So it slightly breaks the Ethernet model, but it's allowed us to get a great sort of critical mass up early. We use route servers to do the route servers for routing updates. We have a centrally managed web-based route entry system, and we automate filter list we automatically generate filter lists on a day-by-day basis. I'm sort of the whole system's built around it. I'm an ex-ISP operator, and ISPs, you know, I used to start it, and we can't resist writing our own billing and operational systems. So the system that runs it was sort of written in-house and has been maintained in-house ever since. Bit of a disclaimer here. Later on, I'll get into a few stories about what some of our customers have done to us and our other customers. I've removed the names to protect the guilty, but I don't mean to pick on anybody in particular. And the reason we can really relay a lot of this information here is because, as a peering point operator, and this might get up bills from PCH's nose, we're a commercial operator. We provide a service, and there's an SLA attached to that service. We have staff who care about our peering. So when something goes wrong, we know about it. We do a lot of preemptive checking, and the people I have looking after this spend all of their time ensuring there are no accidents across our fabric. All right, we're just going to talk about what actually happens at our peering points, the type of routers we use, switching, how we actually do the routing, some other experiences and some suggestions along the way. A lot of this is probably common to a lot of peering points around the world. If it is, I'm not trying to tell you how to suck eggs, but just, you know, exactly what we've done. Yeah, funny enough, a lot of people use our peering points for transit avoidance, least cost routing. That might seem obvious, but it probably needs to be stated. We're not as big as Lynx with their 90 gigabits a second, but we do decent peaks into the 1.2 gigabit per second. That's a 7-day average there. In Australian terms, it's very nice. It's quite big. We don't have a lot of spurious sort of on-net peer-to-peer type content that a lot of other sort of Australian-based operators might receive a lot of traffic from. It's all fairly genuine traffic. We have real content.
Before going on, can you explain what that is measuring?
That is measuring the total Ethernet port in and out, every port on our exchange point.
Across all of your locations?
Across all of our locations. Transit supply. A lot of customers now actually use pipe as a mechanism to actually source either primary sources of internet access or secondary sources. They do this either via a, you know, secondary BGP session across the common VLAN, or they'll nail up some sort of IP and IP tunnel, VPN, sort of GRE. Some of them use like VTUN sessions between Linux boxes in order to actually get that sort of next layer above. And they use things such as, you know, the NetFlow tools or Cisco rate limits in order to actually control how much traffic flows to a particular peer, or from a particular peer in that case. There's a lot of layer 2 forwarding resale. In Australia, the way you actually access a lot of the DSL and a lot of the broadband offerings now from the wholesale carriers is via LNSs and layer 2 sessions, effectively. A lot of these guys flick around these sessions using layer 2 forwarding straight across the exchange fabric. So we see a lot of that sort of activity and actually picking up those tail services. So instead of going to multiple wholesale carriers and picking up multiple tails, they can actually pick them up via the exchange point, and it's been a really, really interesting use of the peering fabric. Intra-city sort of high-speed, low-cost fabric. There's been a little bit of consolidation in the industry in Australia since we've started, not as much as just before we started. And as a result, a lot of businesses have merged or consolidated together. And they'll use and they'll retain their peering link in probably two locations in the same city, and then use it either as backup or as just a straight transmission path between two locations. With the 10 gig metro rings that we deploy, it's really easy to do that. We don't really encourage it, and we try and move them onto a private VLAN because that sort of traffic shouldn't be on a shared fabric for a start, and the really tends to skew our peering statistics. As we like to think that what we're actually seeing on our peering ports is actually peering traffic. Access to Usenet feeds. We have Usenet servers in every place that we deploy. We also make those available to read access to our ISP's customers. That's interesting. We used to have a lot of Usenet servers until we sort of started moderating, I suppose, the type of groups that we'd carry, and more to the point, the size of the articles. And so they don't carry as much interesting, maybe copyright-protected content as they used to. As a result, the usage on those servers has gone down. I had another one in here which I've taken out, which was basically that, you know, ISPs being ISPs, they've got a habit if one ISP stole another ISP's customers. We had one incident of Brisbane where they found it to be a really good high-speed DOS path. It didn't cost them much to teach that other ISP a lesson. We sort of jump on that stuff and stop it as soon as it happens as well, but it was sort of comical for an hour or so. The routers we use all Cisco IOS-based routers. Hard to pass up. They're primary and secondary routers. All of our secondary routers are in actual diverse locations. So while we use the same platform in our secondary routing, they're at different physical locations. All of our locations are backed up with diverse rings as well, so we can lose a site and we still actually get transit between the other sites or transmission between the other sites. We use some Linux and Quagga/Zebra-based routing platforms on what we call our low-value content. So we have some sort of free content areas where people have put Debian mirrors and other sort of file transfer areas like that. And it was just a really cute solution at a time. Those boxes with the appropriate size CPU can transfer a fair bit of traffic, and they've been kicking along ever since on reasonably inexpensive hardware. Our routing table size is about 4% of the global table. That's interesting because, you know, if we did the aggregation thing, I'm not too sure how big it'd be after that. A lot of our customers aren't the best at aggregating, and the presentation before was interesting in that respect. So look, we don't require CRS-1 routers or anything like that, and I often joke that I could actually do it on 2500 series routers, but if I did, my customers would walk away. So we use 7000 series routers. Our routing table is very stable. We haven't deployed any flap controls on it. Whether that's good practice or not, it's worked for us. We've recently deployed a multicast fabric, and using MGP and MDSP, we've been MSDP. We've set that up. Precisely zero ISPs have taken advantage of that at this point, which is a shame. We've put a certain system out there with respect to multicast at an exchange point, and we're waiting for people to tell us if it's good or bad. The switches, we first started using Cisco 3500 series switches, and we ran into a series of problems. They didn't have any 10 gig support, which was, you know, tough when we were sort of started bursting over a gig regularly in places. So we looked at replacing that. We also needed a lot better port control, and on the platform at the time, it just wasn't available. Spanning tree has always been an issue for us, especially customers sending it to us. We really hate that. Broadcast storm control, dual PSUs, hot swap, a whole bunch of other stuff. We ended up going with the Foundry SuperX and then the smaller locations, the FESX platforms, and they've been really quite nice until yesterday in one location. That's another story. The spanning tree control is fantastic, and then the way that they do the 10 gig, and especially the port densities, to be blunt, for the price on that, it was at the time it was really, really hard to pass up. So we've got a lot of 10 gig capability in the network, a lot of bang for buck. Routing. The way we actually route is all customers have to actually enter routes into a central web-based managed system. From that, we actually burn access filters every day, 7:30 in the morning. And basically, if you don't tell us you've got it, we're not going to let you route it. It's about that simple. Each IX point has its own ASN. I don't know if APNIC like us for that, but we've got lots of AS numbers. We use IP space from APNIC under the IXP allocation rules. We monitor all the routes that our customers send to us, and it's a really great tool for actually working out. If a customer rings up and says, I'm seeing some routing issues, we can look at the graph, see the dip or the rise in the number of routes, and you can really sort of jump on a problem quite fast, so that's fantastic. We don't mandate RADB or other IRR. Interesting, when I first started, I thought that'd be a good thing. I think I saw it in the links terms and conditions, and I might have borrowed it. The first few customers we brought on board basically recalled in horror and really didn't want to do it, so we then took it out. So we no longer require that, all based on customer feedback. Other interesting experiences when all the TCP vulnerabilities became a real issue. Within a day or so, we actually implemented MD5 passwords via the web interface again, pushed out automatically to the routers. So we sort of tied down that hole there. We see a lot of really cool stuff that our customers send us. God bless them. We love our customers. A weekly or a daily incident is someone accidentally sending us default route. All these routes hit the filters. There's never any accidents there. We merely get to see in the syslog what's happened. Lots and lots of global tables. The amount of IGP that we see is at times truly staggering. A lot of RIP V1 from certain customers. And all parts of the RFC 1918 address space come along, not to mention everything from sort of slash 32s onwards and usually buckets of them. You know, when an ISP deaggregates into slash 32s that you're in trouble. Some suggestions to potential peers of some of the things we've seen, some things you really shouldn't do. There's some certain commands you really shouldn't turn on unless you know what you're doing. And IP verify, unicast reverse pass, one of them. It's of our major fault when turning up new peers when things don't seem to work properly. We ask them to take that command off, and magic, it all works. So really, if you don't know what you're doing with that one, or you haven't got as much experience in routing as you should have, please turn it off. Symmetrical routing solves so many issues that we see. The BGP decision algorithm, really, you really shouldn't rely on it to actually make a commercial decision, because it makes really poor ones. It's got all sorts of knobs and dials, BGP, that you can use to get a good commercial outcome. By default, it's not the smartest in that respect. It's got no idea what your transit provider's charging you. Please turn off spanning tree. Please turn off spanning tree. ACLs and communities are good things. We actually brand via our web interface. You can actually tell us what location a route's originated from, and then we'll actually leach that out as a community in our announcements and actually brand that for you. That's good when an ISP peers in more than one location, and so people can make intelligent decisions based on where a route actually comes from if they're seeing it in more than one location. Common aggregation policies on your peering and transit. That's our biggest bugbear. We exist by seeing lots of traffic across our peering point. And when a provider sends us a slash 19 but busts that down into 32, did I get that right? Yeah, 32 slash 24s to the rest of the world, then you just don't see as much traffic for some reason. And they'll ring up and say, yeah, but I'm prepending out to my transit provider. I've got four extra ISs in the path. I said, well, the smallest route always wins. So I'm sorry, guys, try it again. We had one fantastic customer bridge their management network, their secure management network, straight onto the IX VLAN. That was unfortunate. Turn your IGPs off, and please don't use spanning tree, because that's not so much now with our new switches, because basically if our switches see your spanning tree BPDU, we'll just shut your port down. It's fantastic. But you still ring us up and get angry, so please don't do it. And look, thank you very much. That's time for me. If there's any questions, I'm more than happy to take them, and that's how we do peering at Pipe Networks.
We can only take one question at most. Any questions? If no, thank you, Stephen.
Disappointed. Thank you.